Yeah, thank you, Christiane, for your message. Richie, on not being allowed to dress up in a person or as a person of a different ethnicity or skin colour. It's so stupid. Does it mean that no coloured person or person of colour is allowed to dress as Santa? Sorry, children, no Santas this year. Only white people have a Santa. Controversial, I know, but the stupidity of this deserves it. Glenn came back to say, if people blackfaced 10 or 20 or 30 years ago, and now the Marxist left wants to judge them based on today's standards, just tell them to get fooked. It was illegal to be gay back in the 1950s. Times change and we move on. Yes, Glenn. Of course we move on. But it shouldn't be offensive in any way to any person of colour. If a man or a woman decides to attend a fancy dress event dressed as a person of colour from history or from sport, and you decide to darken the colour of your skin, it is preposterous to me. I am a reasonable man. I generally and genuinely try to see the other side's argument. In this case, I cannot. Hi to Cavan. Richie, on your approach to the Israeli genocide, would you not just assemble all of the Spartacuses at the entrance to Tel Aviv and be Obi-Wan Kenobi in front of Darth Vader, that sort of thing? Thank you, Cavan, who was listening to the programme yesterday. Yeah. I'll tell you who will have an opinion on this and other matters. He is a former BBC journalist. He is an author. And he is the man behind Not the BCFM Politics Show, which broadcasts out of Bristol live every Friday at 5 p.m. He is the inimitable, he is the incomparable Tony Gosling, and he joins us live this afternoon. Welcome back, Tony. How are you?
The man behind the mask.
The man behind the mask. Do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to organise the world's first fancy dress party for blackface, where black people or people of colour are excluded and only white Ooh. People can attend, and only Ooh. White people who want to represent a person of colour will be allowed to attend, and you must use makeup or boot polish. Why not?
Let's so do I'll it. Be Jimi Hendrix, all right?
You can be Jimi Hendrix. I'm going to be Paul McGrath. I'm going to be Paul McGrath. I'm going to have to put on a bit of a tash. Paul had a tash in his playing days. We'll have to darken our skin. No, an Irish politician has been brought to his knees because when he was the president of Students' Union at University College Cork, Tony, back in 2008 or 9, he went to a fancy dress party dressed up as Barack Obama, and now he's had to apologise and bend the knee to people who might be offended. Anyway, how are you? Good to have you back.
Yeah, not too bad. Been swimming in the Adriatic today, so being a little bit more refreshed than normal.
Good man, you bastard. I've been swimming in Salford, in the rain.
Swimming at the bus stop.
In the rain, at the bus stop, yeah.
In the splatter from the cars, yeah, okay.
I've been splattered by the cars. First things first, this is very serious. Does it matter at all that the United Nations Special Report, the panel of three, the Commission of Inquiry, says Israel has and is committing genocide against the people of Palestine? Does this matter, do you think?
Well, any five-year-old child all over the world knows that that's taking place. So I don't know why we have to have all these bits of paper that tell us that this is happening. It should be blindingly obvious to the most moronic person on the planet that this is what's happening.
What is the... What is the most likely follow-up to this announcement, if any? I mean, I heard two of the three-member panel giving interviews today, and both of them said, well, there's got to be some sort of a meeting now in New York to determine the path forward. But that's unlikely, is it, that meeting to recommend booting out ambassadors, sending peacekeeping troops in and declaring a no-fly zone? It's not going to happen, is it?
No, it's not going to happen. And, I mean, it's good that the Irish have been at least saying things like on the international stage. I think it's Higgins, the president, been saying that there needs to be some unarmed intervention in Gaza, because, of course, this is also very obvious. You know, the Security Council is stymied by the US veto. And so there are methods by which, through the General Assembly, armed intervention can be voted for and can happen. But nobody seems to be. None of the great powers seem to be pushing. Maybe we would get the Irish army as contingent of them, because I know there's some Irish soldiers in Lebanon at the moment, peacekeeping UN forces in Lebanon, UNIFIL, I think they're called. And so there seems to be not just a paralysis of the United Nations, but a deliberate attempt to make sure that all of the possibilities have been excluded to sort out the genocide, you know, to stop it. Maybe even to, you know, to move into Israel, to have an armed intervention against Israel, to remove Netanyahu from power and give the whole entire world, including the Israeli people, a break. But I mean, there is, yeah, I mean, it's the whole situation, it seems to me, is a colossal conspiracy to premeditated genocide and to make sure that Netanyahu is kept in power. And this includes, by the way, the Chinese. I mean, let's not forget the world's great superpower, China. They have done virtually nothing. The Russians have been pushing, at least for ceasefires, very much so at the UN Security Council. The Chinese really haven't been using their political muscle hardly at all, and certainly not threatening to use their military muscle, which they really should be. And we're not talking here about, you know, serious military threats that might create a war, so much as the Chinese just saying that, you know, putting the case that there needs to be armed intervention to prevent the Israelis from carrying on doing. So really what we're seeing is the United States and the Chinese, in a way, kind of working together to make sure that this genocide is able to continue. And, you know, I honestly do not know what methods can be used to force, but at least we've got, you know, one or two nations like the South African and the Irish really pushing for an end to this. Because if it's not ended, Richie, we have the agents of the Netanyahuites, the genocidalists, the genocidaire in the British government right now, in the Foreign Office, in Chatham House, but most importantly in the Ministry of Defence, etc. And the regulators, let's not forget the Financial Conduct Authority, who are supposed to be regulating businesses and stopping them from supporting genocide and are doing absolutely nothing about it. In fact, they're defending Elbit Systems and other US-Israeli armed firms in Britain. And so I think, you know, we need to understand that if this is allowed to continue in Gaza, it's not about Gaza. It's also about criminality and conspiracies, Freemasonry, perhaps, and other sorts of criminal organized crime, mafia in the British government and in governments, that all the governments that have been supporting what's going on right now in Gaza.
The report contains 16,000, or they observed, viewed and handled 16,000 pieces of evidence, which helped them reach their conclusion that it is genocide, including numerous recordings of Israeli soldiers and Israeli commanders laughing and joking about killing unarmed Palestinian civilians. And later this afternoon, a bloke called Rubenstein, who used to be an advisor to Netanyahu, he was speaking to Jane Secker on Sky News, and he openly admitted that what they want to do is to persuade Egypt to open its border and just force the Palestinians in there and get them out of the country once and for all. You're listening to Tony Gosling on the Richie Allen Show from the Adriatic. This show is getting more exotic every day of the week. But I shouldn't make jokes when we've been talking about an appalling genocide. Now, Donald Trump is in this country, or will be shortly, where he's having his unprecedented state visit. But I thought of you this morning. Well, I thought of you twice. I thought of you when I rang you. And then I thought of you when the BBC ran a report about how Alphabet, of course, won a division of Google, is going to spend £5 billion on artificial intelligence in this country. And Tony Gosling will know, because he is more than a decent reporter, is that accompanying Trump on this trip will be the bosses of OpenAI and the bosses of NVIDIA. no doubt about that. And maybe the guy Cook, maybe from Apple as well. So while everybody is talking about Epstein, and we'll get to that in a few minutes, and Mandelson, of course, we will, and all of these other distractions about whether Tommy the Tit had 3 million followers in London on Saturday, which he didn't, while all of this stuff is going on, is the real story the tech aspect of this Donald Trump visit? Is that the most important story that nobody is talking about?
Well, you know, I don't honestly think, I mean, he's pushing against an open door. These tech giants are in the UK because this Labour government, and I can't remember the guy's name, but the trade and industry minister, I think he's the Secretary of State, maybe even, he has been, is it Peter Kyle, Brighton MP, the guy who was friends with the guy that was arrested?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Oh, God. They did a citizen's arrest on him. On his mate, and now he's the MP for the same area, Worthing, I think it might be. But I mean, they are pushing against an open door. We've got a government that loves AI. I think the question for me is why? What is it about AI? And the answer should be fairly obvious to most people by now, is number one, in the military sphere, what we've got is we've got all sorts of insane wars being perpetrated where you cannot actually persuade, for example, teenagers on the streets in Britain to go and sign up to fight the Russians, knowing that they're going to die, that this isn't going to happen. And so in the military sphere, AI is quite obviously being used to replace, individuals, to replace soldiers, to replace pilots, possibly, to replace all sorts of decisions being made by human beings, which are human decisions. The AI is going to be making these decisions because the AI is going to be playing a war game. And that's exactly what the elites want, is they want game theory. They see the international geopolitical rivalries as a giant game. And they, by framing it as a game, they believe that they can set the chess computers and all these AI on it and beat the other side but by using this sort of analogy that, well, here is a military unit, here is a psychological warfare unit, here is a ballistic missile, here is a bomber, an airstrike, and that just press a little button and it will do all the right things in order to take out the other side. And they would much rather that a digital platform of some sort that's got no soul, that is just trying to work out a game and how to win the game, was in charge of it.
Let me ask you this.
The soul from the entire decision.
Yeah, let me ask you this.
Involved in these decisions.
Let me ask you this. Can't really argue with any of that or much of it. Are they not using these wars and proxy wars to trial this equipment on helpless young men from Russia and Ukraine? Aren't these technologies ultimately meant to be deployed in cities against the likes of you and me and our listeners?
Absolutely right. Yeah, and they are, because we are the enemy. And in fact, you can see a lot of that in the march on Saturday, that many of the people that turned out for the Unite the Nation march are just people who feel totally and utterly forgotten and disenfranchised. Yes. By the government, by people who do not feel that there is a country anymore that's worth being in. You know, that what is my country? What, my government is not doing anything for me. I'm paying my taxes. Much of that money is going on things that I don't see any reward for it, particularly our local council taxes now are going. I mean, you know, we're getting our bins collected maybe once every 2 weeks from a gigantic great hopper at the end of the road. The streetlights are going out one by one and not being replaced. The roads are not being repaired. So people are thinking, well, why am I paying all these taxes? What is my country? What is my government? And that's why I think, you know, they see us as the enemy. They know that the people are, I think they call it the precariat, the people who are on the edge of maybe possibly not being able to pay their bills, lose their job. A lot of people already can't. So, they see us as a potential revolutionary force about to rise up against them. And the only thing that's keeping us down from their point of view is the lies spewing out from the mainstream press the whole time about how, oh, look, this week we've got better news about pay is going up. Well, that might be the case, but also our bills are going up, our rent is going up,
faster than our pay, but you know, so they're trying to con us through the news that everything's new normal. Actually, that is all just propaganda they're spewing out about the way we're, you know, they're trying to manage our expectations downwards and tell us that everything's fine. But those people, the 110,000 or so that turned out on Saturday, not for Tommy Robinson, but for Unite the Nation, this is their problem. There's nobody for them to vote for at all. So they have made a stand of some sort. And it was very bizarre to see the pantomime antics that were going on in the stage in front of some of them. Many of them are just looking at it thinking, what's this about, and walked off.
Yeah, that's fair, I think. What might not be fair, and look, I'm not reluctant here. I see that number kind of as you see it, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we're wrong. Why should we believe the BBC and Sky and ITN when it suits us to believe them? Because we know that Tommy Robinson is an opportunistic grifter. Maybe he has a point. Maybe it was far more in attendance than 110,000. And if the media tells us it's 110...
No, it wasn't. I don't think... I mean, I looked at the size of the crowd, the march. This was roughly, I think, the right size. And I know people that went. Not loads, but they're not racist. I know them very well. They're not racist. They're people who are just pissed off, absolutely fed up with the lies coming out from the press and the total mismanagement of the country and the fact that they've got nobody to vote for. Nobody. You know, the Conservatives are not conserving anything, and the Labour Party don't care about people who are working. They're all just working in the uniparty, the one-party state, which is effectively a kind of, World Economic Forum political party, which is now running Britain. And that's why the people that I know, and it's not even the World Economic Forum is why they went. They just feel disenfranchised, but they still love their country and they want something to be done about, you know, in a way, it's a bit like in America, make England great, make Britain great again. They want somebody out there who is batting for them. You know, for example, just simple stuff, Richie, like how difficult it is to run a small family business, whether you're running a farm or whether you're running a shop in a high street or whether you're running a pub or even a burger van. It's becoming more and more difficult to make a living on purpose because the chains are taking over. The rentiers are taking over. The people are, you know, the pips are being squeezed in terms of rent and mortgages. And they the people out marching know that something needs to be done about this before we totally lose any ability of people in the country to make money for their own kids, for their own family, to put a roof over their kids' head. And this is, I mean, it's only corporate interests seem to be being paid any attention to. The people like BlackRock are basically running the show.
You're listening to the broadcast journalist and author Tony Gosling, not the BCFM Politics Show, live every Friday at 5 p.m. Always brilliant. It really is great. Terrific guests, great insight into geopolitical events here in the UK, great debates, great arguments. Tony Gosling with us. Tony, just quickly before we talk about Charlie Kirk, there will be listeners who... to this program, and I know because they send me messages, and they did last night because we were talking about Nigel Farage's problems on this program last night with Mr. Ethical Nicholas Wilson, who believes that Farage has a lot of serious questions to answer about his financial affairs. So during the course of that conversation, it occurred to me a lot of his supporters, Farage's supporters, do listen to this program and they're very welcome. They reckon he is the answer, given a chance, the Reform Party. That might be the answer to the 110,000 people who marched over the weekend. Farage says he will close the borders and all of that. What do you say to those listeners who follow Reform and will vote for them?
Well, I say Farage is no good. You know, I've followed him obviously for many years. He nearly died in a light aircraft crash. You know, a little bit like Trump with his bullet through his ear. You know, these people are, but I don't think the Farage party is actually serious. I think my experience of meeting them and interviewing them is that they're mostly interested in shareholding and investment. And the idea of being out of the EU is obviously appeals to them. But that means that they don't have to obey the regulations of the EU. I don't see them as honestly as patriots. I also see what they're doing Nigel Farage himself is clearly aligning himself with the Israelis. Anybody that does that, far as I'm concerned, is in the bin. You can't do that if you're a serious politician. I mean, I know in the West,
if you're a human being,
we're talking about Charlie Kirk as well. If you start veering away from supporting the Israelis, you get into all sorts of political trouble and you get a load of hassle. But, you know, anybody that's going to have a future for this country has got to stand up public for the Israelis. And they, even if they're risking getting shot.
Yeah, for the Palestinians. Now let's talk about this, because we'll have an argument here. We're back to Monty Python again. I've come for an argument. Now, Charlie Kirk, for listeners who might not know who he was, he came out of nowhere in 2013 with a so-called grassroots political movement, a Republican movement. Went to a Republican national convention, met some very big heavyweights in the Republican Party, some major donors, and was given a lot of money, and he was on his way. And he became fairly famous for going to unis and colleges and taking questions from political opponents, all very interesting, and he had a podcast, and he grew a very big following. Last week, on Thursday in Utah, he was doing the very same thing. He was taking questions from the student body, and he was shot to death, seemingly by a student, apparently, who had talked on some forums about wanting to do it, because you can't speak to people like Charlie Kirk. But you don't buy any of this, do you? You think there's a much bigger story than he was just shot by a political opponent who lost his mind and decided to kill him in a fit of rage. What do you think happened?
Well, why is Charlie Kirk important? The fact is, he was going places, Richie. So he'd been quite well known in the States for over a decade, as you say. But the thing is, he was finding his feet. He really was a very, very sharp debater. So the sort of person who could debate with anybody pretty much on a live TV, you know, to become a potential president, certainly a senator. And so, you know what I thought when I first saw this? I thought this is a little bit like the Norwegian Anders Behring Breivik. I don't know if you remember him from 2011, who shot all these Labour Party in Norway summer camp.
Yes,
children. Because the idea is you identify your political opponents and then you blow away the ones who are young and may be your opponents in the future. So, you know, if you imagine, I mean, Charlie's got another 40 years of potential political contribution to make in the United States. To kill him at the age of 31 is a great victory for the opponents of everything he stood for. I mean, Breivik is such a fascinating Torstein Vidal. I'm sure you can still find the article out there, as it was a Norwegian friend of mine. Did an absolutely mind-blowing article about Breivik, saying he was both a Zionist and a Nazi at the same time. And it turns out also he was a Freemason. They've got pictures of him in his Masonic gear, the guy that did these assassinations. They said at the time he was a loner. Well, obviously he's not. If he's in a Masonic lodge, he's in with a whole bunch of other people in a secret society. And, you know, those are the sorts of people that should be being interviewed about what he's done. But the point is, by killing Charlie, what you've done is you've stopped someone who was starting to veer towards becoming pro-Palestinian. He'd been funded a long time by the Zionist lobby in the States. And so this is an obvious, you know, motive. Somebody, whatever the method used to get the bullet into the guy and kill him, the motive has got to be, to me, has got to be he's speaking out now against the people who have in the past been funding him. So what was he saying? He was saying all sorts of things like, try and guilt trip me to begin with, which is a great thing to say for anyone who's going to be a successful politician, because it means that they've got integrity, that they believe things, and that nobody can guilt trip them or try and threaten them into changing their point of view. Fantastic. This is the sort of person we need in politics. There's all sorts of reasons, you know, why I think that these were the motives to kill him, because, you know, the poor guy, I mean, he said, for example, he was talking about the October the 7th attacks. Well, it looks to me as if the Israeli army was stood down on October the 7th. He travelled around that area extensively in the past. And, he's saying, well, when I was in that area, there was the military all over the place. So where were they on the 7th of October? So he's asking these questions. He's talking about genocide. He was putting to Ben Shapiro saying, well, this is a genocide, isn't it? You know, and also talking about it as ethnic cleansing. So he's starting to veer away. He's starting to find his heart for the Palestinian people and saying, well, all this stuff about, you know, Israel, which I've been supporting in the past. Well, looking at what the way they're behaving, he's very much like Scott Ritter, actually. Scott has been exactly the same. He was pro-Israel for many years. And he's, you know, I asked him some questions once about the Israeli nuclear weapons and whether that we should have a raid to get rid of those weapons. And he said, oh, God, I can't go there. You know, now I'm sure he's be very different. He's been very outspoken about this genocide. He sees it for exactly what it is. And that's what I like about some individuals is they're prepared to change their point of view based on the new facts that are arriving. Like, these guys are genocidalists. No, I'm afraid I can't support them anymore.
Charlie Kirk was
one of those.
Let me in, because I disagree with that. Let me in, and then you can come back in a second. For me, the rise of Kirk itself and how it manifested is a massive red flag. Like, he came from nowhere to be one of the most recognisable young kind of conservative voices. He portrayed it as a grassroots rebellion kind of a thing, but that was bollocks, basically. And I think his rise to prominence, if I look at it, fits the pattern of him being an establishment asset. Like, he was groomed, I would argue, to kind of channel a lot of kind of youthful energy back into kind of safe partisan lanes, basically, while portraying himself, Tony, as being a bit of a disruptive outsider. Like, this guy, while people like you and others and people like us in America were being banned, TikTok were amplifying this guy like nobody before. And this organization he launched, which was funded, you know, to the tune of millions and millions of dollars by Foster Freese and the Koch network as well. And there are others. It just doesn't, for me, it doesn't fit. Like, and you say, and it's a good point you make about he might have changed his tone on Israel. Well, maybe he did, but did the Israelis really care? I mean, there are a lot of mainstream people, Tucker Carlson and many others, even national broadcasters like the BBC, who've been calling out Israel for what Israel is. And my final word would be on it, and you come back in, then my final word would be, all he was doing really, Kirk, was really propping up the status quo, the two-party system. Effectively, the wrong people are in charge. If the Democrats are in charge, you've got the wrong people. If Trump is in the White House or a Republican, you've got the right people. I think he basically put old wine in new bottles. That's what I think he did. And that's my take on him. Very good, very polished, very well spoken. I agree with all of that. But I just don't see how he'd represent a threat to anybody. Go ahead.
He was the same sort of threat as Jesus Christ was. He was a person who was talking truth to power like I've never seen. I don't know if you saw his talk. It was about a month ago. I think it was early August, maybe mid-August. He came over to the Oxford Union. He'd also done the Cambridge Union, too, to debate with people there. Very, very sharp, actually quite generous to his opponents, respectful to his opponents. And this is the thing, is it's not, I don't hate you because you disagree with me, but I am going to get to put my case. And he was, in fact, I would suggest he was a Christian leader in the United States in a way that you don't see many preachers talking the way he did. But he was mixing those Christian values, things like anti-abortion. You know, there's all sorts of anti-war type stuff to do with the Russians and Ukraine and against all that. And some pretty, very sharp politics, as I said, in a sense where, I mean, I'd not come across him before, but to be frank with you, never. But as I looked at, you know, last week, was watching, who is this guy that they've blown away? I'm warm to him more and more because I could see him doing what I love people to do, which is to change their views on changing circumstances, not to be very rigid about everything that they think. And also, of course, this is going to really annoy the people you spoke about who put him into the position where he was if he starts to turn against the one thing that they want him to say, which is Israel is a wonderful place and God given, etc. So he was, he was going against that against that fault line, and he was really going places. And I would suggest anybody that's not seen it, go and have a look at his Oxford Union speech. I think he called it "Make England Great Again," something rather cheesy like that.
Yeah,
but the debate was, has Trump gone too far? And he put a very good case for we need more Trumps, we need more like Trump. And also, I think for many people, I mean, we need to understand how big political movements have got to be picking up on the Charlie Kirks of this world, the youngsters who have got some drive, articulate, understand the world quite well, and to have a pipeline of people like this coming into their political movement. Because as the way I see politics, as I was saying earlier on, in the World Economic Forum zone, in the Eurozone, and increasingly in America, but not really with Trump, is dead, is absolutely dead. There's a whole bunch of people who are just reading from a script. Starmer will read anything they put in front of him. He doesn't have beliefs. He cannot actually speak off the cuff in a heated debate of any sort. I'm glad to see more and more people like Charlie Kirk coming along from the Turning Point organization. And I'd be really happy to see that he himself and his assassination is some kind of turning point in US politics, where young people see that these Christian values are worth standing up for, and that actually a political movement can be built around them. And I think it should be.
I'm going to give you my final word on him. And you know I'm not stubborn and I'm not obtuse, but I did know a little bit about him. This might mark the first time in living memory that I had a bit of a heads up on a guy before the great Tony G, Tony Gosling.
Oh, come on,
but no, it's true. No, you're very sharp. But I'm kind of surprised you didn't know a little bit about. I mean, I would have spoken about him on this program back in 2016, 2017, but before the 2016 election, because he was everywhere with the Trump people, and particularly last year before the November election. My final word is this, right? He was barely out of high school. All of a sudden, I mentioned Freeth. I didn't mention the Ulane family. I'm thinking the Bradley Foundation. I mentioned the Koch brothers. Given millions. Algorithms boosted him. The same algorithms that were burying you and burying me and others. And this is true. And both you and I can say that with a straight face, because we have had enormous followings. My YouTube channel was shut down in 2017. It had in excess of 100,000 subscribers and it was gaining 2,000 to 3,000 a week. Gone. PayPal banned. Gone. Why? Because what I was doing then and what you were doing was what this guy was purportedly doing, which is talking to everybody, particularly those you disagree with, to try and get to the bottom of what's really going on in the world. This guy was boosted while everybody else was crushed. He was given stages. He was given airtime on major television networks and credibility. But he planted his flag in Trump's corner. And he was in lockstep with Israel and what Israel was doing. That doesn't sound to me like a grassroots rebel or a Jesus or a messianic figure. I don't think he was ever going to break the system. For me, he was going to keep people locked inside it. And that's all. And look, of course, I could be wrong, but I do believe it is possible. It's crazy in America, Tony. The polarization, it is insane. I'm not saying it did happen this way, but I can believe it that some young lad who might be dating a trans person gets it into his head that Charlie Kirk is the devil. And you know what? I'm going to take a shot at him. And that's my final word. Word to you, and then we'll talk about Mandelson. Go on.
Yeah, well, he was breaking out of the palace that had been paid for him, and he was starting to go his own way a bit in the face of the genocide. But I think we should talk a little bit about this guy Tyler Robinson, who's the alleged killer, because I think whenever I look at things like this, I think about why he's killed, which we've been talking about. And then I think about how it's done. And with somebody like that, okay, so I've been reading quite a lot about this Tyler character, shacked up with a trans person. The trans people hated Kirk, absolutely despised him, wanted him dead, openly were saying that they wanted him dead. So there is an obvious connection potentially there. But also it looks as if he was on antidepressant drugs, which are extremely dangerous, can make people horrifically aggressive and actually contribute to an assassination like this. So to me, it's somewhere either he's been groomed online, and this has happened. I think this is possibly what happened with Axel Rudikubana, you know, at Southport. Is the idea is these people are encouraged, literally told, go and do this. And, you know, you will be promoted, because I don't know how many people have heard of this satanic Nazi Order of the Nine Angles, which Yvette Cooper, when she was Shadow Home Secretary, said it must be banned. It's a satanic terrorist group. And it's William Ramsey's written a book about it called The Global Death Cult. A fascinating William Ramsey, if you can get hold of him. But this is one of the main groups on the far right, which is a death cult. What they do is they promote people up through this Order of Nine Angles for the more people that they've assassinated and the more people that they've killed. And so it could be that he's been sucked into that and groomed online. It also could be, of course, that he's just someone who's picked up. He's a bit of an inadequate individual, and he's just picked up on, all my peer group will think I'm really great if I go and assassinate the person that they keep saying they want to kill and who's a Nazi bitch, excuse my language.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the language they were using about him. And so it's one of those two, I think, is the method. And the thing that makes me think it's more likely to be this guy is also the fact that he's now refusing to cooperate with the police. So it may well be that there's some specific, you know, online grooming been going on to induce him to do this, that he's been told, look, you've got to be completely silent about that. And don't tell anyone about it. So he's obviously got something to hide. So I think Order of Nine Angles, you know, this is the sort of organization that may well have induced him to do this. I think this is how they do these sorts of things now, is through these death cults like O9A. And by the way, the O9A is very much supported by the accelerationists. All the accelerationist people like Musk, etc., have actually said positive things about this global death cult. And people like Nick Land, my old schoolmate, they are saying, oh, this is brilliant. And why is Yvette Cooper not banned, a death cult terrorist organization that's satanic and Nazi inspired in Britain? Why has she not banned it?
Maybe you're shoving a MacMood might do it now.
You're banning Palestine Action.
I know it's madness.
Supporters, but you're not banning a Nazi terror group that's satanically inspired. Why not?
Now, our listeners are having their say. I think they're leaning towards the boy Tony Gosling, turncoats as they are. So we'll read it. We'll read a few of these.
They're treacherous
listeners. Colin says, "No way was this Tyler the shooter. No way," says Colin. He doesn't believe that Tyler himself did it. David reckons, even if Charlie Kirk was a creation, so what? So was Take That, and Barlow is still a genius. Fantastic. Faisal says, Richie, listening to Tony, Charlie Kirk's recent U-turn on the Zionist influence on US government and even calling out Epstein as a Mossad asset was most certainly a factor to consider in his murder. It's one thing when the left ineffectually makes a fuss about genocide, but when an asset they funded turns against them, Faisal leaning towards Tony. Karen reckons Jesus/the Messiah, my arse, says Karen. Thank you, Karen. And there's so many of these coming in. They're leaning towards you, pal, that the about turn on Israel might have had him seen off. I'm always fair. 1-0 to Gosling. Let's talk about Mandelson.
I think that was actually 4-0, wasn't it? 1-0. No,
4-1. 4-1, all right. 4-2. Right. So do you know what I think about because you and I talked over the years. We first met when I was on Spanish radio many, many years ago, and we used to talk about permacrisis. We used to talk about a series of escalating. You of course call it accelerationism, and you're right. We see chaos everywhere now. We see governments that don't last 10 minutes. And I have this feeling, I've always believed, it's more than a feeling, it's a belief that this is how they keep people uneasy and diseased or in dis-ease, uncomfortable and stressed and wound up. And they do it so they roll out their technocracy. Is it happening with Starmer? Are they going to use Mandelson to bring Starmer down just to throw a whole pile of chaos into our lives again? And maybe not this year, but maybe next year or 2027, another election. Tell us about, I mean, you know, nobody knows more about Peter Mandelson and his life and times than you, because you've been reporting on him for 2.5, maybe 3 decades now. What's going on there, Starmer? Well, we were satisfied that Peter Mandelson had ended his friendship with Jeffrey Epstein. We were satisfied that we knew what Peter knew, and that's why we gave him the gig. And then we find out that Starmer was lying. He admitted today that he did know the full extent of Mandelson's relationship with Epstein. And now there are people calling for Starmer to resign and all of that. What's really happening here, do you think?
Well, it's the chaos agenda. This is accelerationism. Everyone needs to get absolutely their heads around what is accelerationism. This dark enlightenment penned by Nick Land. You don't have to read the whole thing, but it's, you know, you need to understand. Nick is what you would call a Nazi on acid. So he was a Nazi when I knew him. You know, he was then went on to lots and lots of hallucinogenic drugs, and this is the stuff that's come out. This is the stuff he's penned, the Dark Enlightenment, various other documents. But when it, you know, when it comes to Mandelson and the politics now, I mean, the idea is just to get everybody in a real twist and get people switched off from politics and get disengaged from voting, to make sure there's nobody to vote for, as we were talking about the Unite the Nation march, because the fascists, the owners, the shareholders want to run the show. Nick is an anarcho-capitalist. He thinks that money should just, you know, those with money should just be able to do whatever they want with it. And maybe that means, and this is where the Nazi side comes in, getting rid of disabled people, survival of the fittest. That's basically the way he wants to take things.
Yeah, but he's never said that. Hang on. He's not here to defend himself. And he might say, hang on, old friend, Tony Gosling, I'm not a Nazi.
I'd love to have a little debate with Nick.
Yeah, but he might say, look, I'm not a Nazi. I might be an anarcho-capitalist, but I'm not
a
Nazi.
He was a Nazi. Yeah, he was a Nazi. When I knew him, and you know, he most definitely was. And he would not say he wasn't. I'm sure he wouldn't. But the point is to get everybody turned off from all of the organized institutions that keep us safe, most importantly, the democratic institutions and the mass media, which keeps a check on things. You know, the last court of appeal, the courts system, the court process as well. All these things are being smashed to pieces so that the only thing left for us is going to be a kind of Fourth Reich fascist World Economic Forum style, the rich run and control and own everything. They're also, of course, working very hard on the money system to try to make sure that nobody actually has any wealth of their own, like, you know, something that like a gold or commodities, that everyone has just got credits, you know, so they've got somewhere to live, but they don't actually have anything. And so they can, very much like the Chinese system, you know, the social credit system, if you don't behave yourself, we're going to take away your credits. And you know, like, you know, taking away the saucer of milk from the cat, and the cat looks up at you. Oh no, why have you taken that away? I was just enjoying that. So that's the way they see themselves, as basically people farmers. You know, the towns and the cities, I think that's the vision that they've got. Now, whether they can actually get away with this, I don't know. But that's why we're seeing what we're seeing, I think, with Mandelson and Starmer. It is to just show everybody, to rub everyone's nose in the fact that the political system is being broken in front of our eyes. Mandelson was put in place with the knowledge that, well, maybe, you know, he might be able to get some of the, you know, as the Prince of Darkness is City of London's will in the United States. But anyway, they see it as an advantage when he's sacked, because it looks like everything's a big disaster, which it is. And so people are just getting disillusioned with voting, you know, disenfranchised, people disengage. And also it sends a very, very negative morale wave. So everyone's morale is being broken. So it wouldn't surprise me if we see, you know, real trouble on the streets of Britain in years and, you know, months and years to come.
Yeah,
because that's part of this agenda.
It is
to get everybody disunited as much as possible, and disillusioned and depressed.
And then martial law.
So there's nothing, there's no hope on the horizon for anybody. That's the sort of, in a way that they're using what is the sort of psychological warfare which is used to disillusion armies and people from fighting. They're using that sort of technique, I think, now on the population of Britain and in other countries. Mandelson. Yeah. You know, Mandelson, yes, he's an interesting guy, but, you know, look, he was never ever, everybody knew about the Epstein stuff. So don't try and kid a Starmer that you didn't. Of course you did.
Tony's going to stay with us for 5 more minutes. There's another question I want to ask him. You are listening to The Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live out of Salford on The Richie Allen Show app. Download it. Well, download it here.
Download The Richie Allen Show app now at Google Play or Apple's App Store. For more details, visit richieallen.co.uk.
It is the most basic of apps in the world, but it does what it says on the tin. I'm going to read a quick few comments and we'll get some reaction from Tony before we wrap today. Very good of him to come on and rub our noses in it, that he's in the Adriatic while we're being rained on dats and cogs. Here's one from Mark. Richie, Farage has said many times he doesn't want to actually be PM, even if Reform forms the next government or is part of the next government. He will step down and leave us with the new Tory party / Reform, much like the old one. That's an interesting take. It really is. Good evening to Charlie. Trump is a criminal. Backtracking bastards, says Charlie. I want them to show them now and clear up this mess one way or the other. And I hope Operation Warp Speed was as brilliant as many say it was. If not, we want to know about it and why. Yeah, Trump was Mr. Operation Warp Speed. Luke is in Long Beach in New York. Welcome, Luke. I didn't like him, as in Charlie Kirk, about his stance on Israel, but after further review, I changed my mind on Charlie. He began to ask questions about Gaza and Israel's control of American politics. He refused money from the Zionists, and he became very open-minded about the genocide. And didn't Bibi Netanyahu text 20 minutes after the shooting, before Trump even did, and said he died? Do you think that was significant, by the way, Netanyahu tweeting?
Definitely. Yeah. No, very important point. Thank you. And Netanyahu did actually a TV denial about it as well. And you and I know that phrase, never believe anything until it's officially denied. Yes, of course, this was a very positive thing for Netanyahu. I would also just want to say something quickly about the march and the rally on Saturday, because there was, as people may know, there was actually a death threat issued against Starmer. Now, I wouldn't normally talk about things like this, but what staggers me is the way that the police are handling this. You know, that if you issue a death threat against somebody, then you'll have your collar felt immediately. I mean, we had this sort of question when I was in the mainstream press in the late 1980s. And what you would do is, you no way would you transmit a death threat. Never. And you would never allow that to go out on the airwaves. And you would probably, you know, even if you didn't think it was the right thing to do, you would just hand that footage or whatever over to the cops and say, this guy's threatening to kill somebody. This is incitement to murder. And so there was one of these against Starmer on Saturday, filmed and transmitted. Apparently, the police are still looking for the guy. And what is amazing is the Daily Mirror actually pixelated out the guy's face. So the police are looking for someone who's threatening to kill the Prime Minister, but his face is pixeled out, so to make sure you can't identify and help find him. You know, so this is to me is amazing. The other thing I noticed at the time was on the Saturday morning. On Sunday morning, we had on the LBC News and various other bulletins, we had the voice of a very croaky Tommy Robinson speaking to the crowd. Now, when have you ever heard a left-wing political rally where the people speaking to the crowd are then transmitted on that night's or the next morning's news? Never. Never. So this shows you, shows anybody with a bit of insight into this, that the mass media in London is pushing the Robinson line, even though what he's saying has got very little to do with many of the hundreds of the 100,000 or so people that were there.
No, hang on. They call
the press focusing on him.
Hang on. They refer to him constantly as far right. They use terms like thug when they refer to him, and they've been openly laughing at him on Good Morning Britain and on the BBC for claiming there were 3 million people at the rally. So I can't see how the legacy media is in fact pushing Robinson's movement. How?
So okay, so why are they quoting, why are they actually transmitting his speech from the day before on the news? We never hear this from the Palestinians. We never hear the Jeremy Corbyn or whoever it happens to be speaking, or David Miller or Craig Murray, who's speaking at the rallies and marches for the pro-Palestinians. Never. In all my time, I've never, ever, ever seen or heard any voices from a rally or march, which is, you know, for the people and for the common sense. But as soon as Robinson turns up, yeah, there. And of course, this is a sort of Illuminati style way of dealing with things. So they're looking at the very top of the pyramid, not the hundreds of thousands of people who are turning out below. They're not interested in them. Yeah. So what they're trying to do is corral these masses into that they can then control and say, this guy represents all these people. What about the Maoris? Did you see that? The Maoris tearing up the Palestinian flag on Saturday? Well, I looked into that. I know some New Zealanders. And who are these Maoris? And he said, well, they're not really proper Maoris. The guy's a Christian Zionist. He runs a very strange church in Auckland. And many of the people who are there doing the Hakka next to Tommy Robinson are actually white guys. They're not Maoris at all. So this is a Christian Zionist church which is pretending to represent the Maoris. Now, most Maoris understand what genocide is.
Yes.
You know, they know many Aboriginals know exactly what the ones that are left, what the genocide that went on in Australia that the British perpetrated, the genocide in North America, the 100 million Native Americans that were killed after Cabot sailed over there and Columbus sailed over there. So this is a total pervert. This is perfect accelerationism, a total inversion of the truth. The Maoris that stood there are there doing a pantomime theatre, a very sinister dance, trying to make out that the Maoris in some way, you know, support Israel and not the Palestinians.
Yeah,
what
white guys,
absolute travesty.
Yeah, the
none of it's been properly critiqued anywhere in any of the news I've seen at all.
Thank you for spending some of your break with us. Enjoy the rest of it. Tony, you'll be back next month. In the meantime, thisweek.org.uk, bilderberg.org, check out Not the BCFM Politics Live every Friday between 5 and 8 p.m. It is outstanding. Thanks again, pal. Can't wait for next time. Get back in the
sea. Thank you, Richie, and don't let the satanic banksters get you down.
No, they'll never get us down. Thanks, Tony. The great Tony Gosling, live on the Richie Allen Show for Tuesday, the 16th of September 2025. Again, thisweek.org.uk, bilderberg.org. Tony live every Friday with a cast of thousands of terrifically interesting people, academics, writers, researchers. Friday from Bristol. That's right. Shall I take a tune, shall I? Think I will. Before I do that, though, keep your comments coming in. There are about a dozen more for me to read out. I'm sure more will come in the meantime. So keep them coming in. Download my app. I've already played that jingle. Google Play, Apple's App Store. If you are outside the country and you'd like to get it, I think you should use a VPN. A VPN. All right.
Your voice, your opinions. The Richie Allen Show, where free speech takes the mic and no topic is off limits.